Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's a chilly, gorgeous day in November 2022, and will be first broadcast on Wednesday, November 30th on 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is trying to keep warm in the other room right now. I'm coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let me know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So, a couple things. I wanted to review a few more Thanksgiving foods that are healthy for you any time of year, and you may be listening to this after Thanksgiving, but it's still that time of year to eat all those great foods. So I wanted to talk about that. Before I talked about that, I wanted to talk about something that I seem to be repeating over and over again to my patients. So maybe it will help you out as well. First of all, lots of people, especially peri and postmenopausal women, are complaining that they gain weight. And when they gain the weight right here. And if you can see me on Facebook Live, you can see that I am pointing to my belly, my midsection. And I referred to it as meno belly, which is something I did not make up, but I said it to a patient yesterday and she lost it. She thought it was hilarious because it's so true. Meno belly, right? You know, it's that midsection fat that you get and everybody gets it right there. So why does that happen? You get meno belly because when we're in peri and postmenopause, we have a reduction in our estrogen and progesterone because we're not cycling anymore. So progesterone and estrogen push an enzyme called hormone sensitive lipase, which helps you to burn fat. And if you don't have a lot of estrogen and progesterone around, you don't have that enzyme being very active anymore. And the other thing that happens is if you're under any kind of stress, which most people are, if they're in my office, they're probably stressed. Even if they say they aren't, they are. You know, and so what happens when you're stressed? You have more cortisol going on. And the thing is that progesterone and estrogen, they mitigate the effects of cortisol. And what is cortisol's purpose? Cortisol's purpose is to run around your body looking for tissue to break down, turn it into sugar. So you have sugar in your blood. So you have energy to run away from the bear or get the report done or take care of the kid or take care of the parent or get the Thanksgiving dinner ready or get the Christmas presents bought or whatever it is you're doing that's giving you stress. Right? Or fighting with your family or having issues with your children or whatever it is, right? And so now you don't have that estrogen progesterone around and you have a higher cortisol burden and you're more sensitive to cortisol. So cortisol puts sugar into your blood so you have energy to do whatever it is that you need to do. And if you don't use all of that sugar in some kind of activity, your insulin's going to rise because you have extra sugar in your blood and your insulin's going to be interested in pushing that sugar into your cells for use. And there's only so much that can be pushed into your cells. And once that's used up, the insulin goes, look, can't not get it into the cells anymore. Got to do something else with it. So it turns it into fat, turns it into triglycerides. And the triglycerides go through your circulation. And, you know, your body regulates how much triglycerides are in your blood. You don't want to have a lot of triglycerides in your blood because triglycerides are easily oxidized. Once they become oxidized, then they can easily be turned into, once they're oxidized, they can damage the inside of your blood vessels, and that gives you cardiovascular disease. And your body will send platelets, cholesterol, and calcium to repair the inside of your blood vessels, and then you can have a buildup of plaque, and that causes atherosclerosis and hardening of the arteries and blockages, which can happen in your heart and can happen in your brain. So too much cortisol, so much stress can lead to cardiovascular disease. No fun, right? So when you have that cortisol, also your body's going to be interested in taking the extra sugar out of the circulation, so it turns it into triglycerides, and then it pushes into fat storage. And the place it tends to store fat that has been manufactured from circulating triglycerides is in your belly. So insulin-generated fat storage happens in your belly. So that's why it tends to accumulate there. Now, the good news is it's somewhat easier to lose belly fat than it is to lose fat if you tend to gain it around your hips and thighs. Hip and thigh weight gain can be genetically mediated, but it also tends to be mediated by extra estrogen. And that fat is harder to lose. Belly fat is a little bit easier to lose because if you can get a handle on the insulin regulation, it becomes easier to lose. So what is the what's the most important thing in weight loss? So first of all, we have to do the Fight Club joke. What's the number one rule of Fight Club? Don't talk about Fight Club. What's the most important rule of weight loss? Don't talk about weight loss. Why? Because talking about weight loss makes you crazy. And weight loss, shout out to my colleague and friend, Jade Tita, who said to me that weight loss is neither linear, fair, nor predictable. And what that means is that you don't necessarily lose weight in a direct line. It's not fair because you can do everything you want to do, everything you need to do, you think, to lose weight, and then the weight doesn't come off. You can have a really great week and then gain 2 pounds, especially if you're female. And because there's a huge hormonal mediation to fat loss, to whatever weight you're at, your metabolic rate, you're going to have much more, your metabolic system is controlled by hormones. And depending on what your hormonal status is, you may or may not gain weight. And predictable because you don't necessarily know internally, specifically metabolically, what's going on. So when you're trying to lose weight, you shouldn't try to lose weight. What sense does that make? Weight loss is not a thing you do. Weight loss is a thing that happens as a result of stuff you do. So what is the stuff you do? You can celebrate making a healthy meal, eating a healthy meal, staying away from sugar that day, going for a walk, getting good exercise, getting good rest. So what is the most important part of fat loss? Is it eating a healthy diet? I'm going to say no. Is it getting exercise? I'm going to say no. Those are both important, and you're going to be much more successful at fat loss if you eat a healthy diet and you get exercise. But the number one thing that's the most important for losing fat is rest, believe it or not. And what sense does that make? We're getting back to that cortisol, right? So when you rest, you drop cortisol. Cortisol is the thing that causes you to gain weight and prevents you from burning fat. And cortisol is the thing that helps you deposit the fat in that midsection, that thing that you're so concerned about. So just as important as eating a healthy diet. I'm not saying that eating a healthy diet and exercising are not important. They are. But you need to incorporate rest with all of those things. So what does rest look like? Rest looks like getting adequate sleep. If your sleep is off and there's something wrong with your sleep, then you need to work on getting yourself to sleep better. And sometimes you're not sleeping because you're nonstop, and your day starts when you wake up and it ends when your head hits the pillow, and you're so revved up because you've had no rest during that day that your body has no idea how to rest. You're just at this high level of cortisol all the time, and your body just can't come down from it. When you train your body to take breaks from cortisol, you're going to be more likely to be able to spend time in low cortisol so that you can go to sleep and get your good restorative rest. So just as important as diet and exercise is taking time to lower cortisol. So what's the best way to lower cortisol? Basically, sitting still and deep breathing. When you sit still and you breathe deeply, you lower cortisol. So that's something, and we can embellish it all we want by doing all kinds of cool stuff while we're deep breathing and sitting, but that's the number one thing, just being still, sitting or lying still and breathing deeply. Yes, it's true that there are restorative activities that are not lying still and deep breathing, that getting exercise is a restorative activity. Sitting and knitting is a restorative activity. Playing the guitar, playing music is a restorative activity. Listening to music is a restorative activity. Playing with your kids, laughter, those are all restorative activities. But I'm starting to insist with my patients that they develop a practice of stillness. Let me say that again, practice of stillness, and I'm urging you to do that as well. Practice of stillness is a great thing. And practice of stillness is going to turn into anything else you want in your life. If you have that practice of stillness, it's going to give your brain a break. It's going to give your body a break. It's going to lower your cortisol. It's going to help you to lose fat. It doesn't help you all the way, because I'm going to tell you, in my perspective, I'm still at a weight that's higher than I would like to be. I don't think I'm at an unhealthy weight, but I'm definitely in my BMI is elevated. I'm in the overweight range, but I'm sitting 5 to 10 pounds lower than I was maybe a year ago, because I have developed a practice of stillness pretty much every day. My choice of practice of stillness is yoga. I love to do yoga. You don't have to do yoga. You can do whatever you want. The number one thing that you need to do for your practice of stillness, as I said, is sit or lie still and breathe. And I recommend doing that while awake. Now, if you fall asleep during the practice, that's okay. But it's because taking a nap is a practice of stillness too. But I think it's a good idea to learn to have a practice of stillness while you're awake, so you can practice going into a low cortisol state while you're awake. And if you practice that, you're going to be able to do it any old time. So if you're sitting in the car and you're late for something, and you know you have a stressful drive, you can breathe while you're in the car and get yourself to that place of calm and equanimity while you're in the car. If you're having an argument with a family member, you're not going to be as invested in fighting with them if you can get to that place of calm and equanimity. So what are some examples of things you can do to lower your cortisol? What is this practice of stillness I'm talking about? Simplest thing you can do is sit or lie still and breathe deeply. That's it. All right. Now, not everybody finds that they can do a seated meditation and lie or be still without being guided through it. And I'm one of those people. I like to do something while I'm lying still. If you can just sit or lie still and breathe deeply, and you don't need any other guidance from that, that will work. A lot of people find that difficult, so they need help with that. And so what are some things you can do? So the next step would be that's slightly more active is to have a guided meditation. So again, you're sitting or lying in an extremely comfortable position, and then you're listening to something that's guiding you through a meditation, so that if the brain starts to spin, you've got somebody talking you through an activity that you're doing to get yourself to be calmer. So where can you get guided meditations? There are apps, for example, that you can get. You can look at Headspace or Calm, and inside those apps, there are guided meditations. There's counting breathing where you count, like box breathing. So box breathing is where you breathe in on the count of four, one, two, three, four. You hold for a count of four with your breath held in, one, two, three, four, and then you exhale on the count of four, one, two, three, four, and then you hold out for a count of four. And so it's box breathing. And one of the apps is really cute. It has a little visual where where a line goes up for that count of four. So you just breathe as the line is going up, you breathe in. As the line is going across, you hold. As the line is going down, you exhale. And as the line is going across again, you hold. And so it's this great visual. It has a little smiley face that smiles and straightens out while you're breathing. It's adorable. And so you don't have to count even. You just follow the little line and breathe on the box. And it's literally a box. So you're literally doing the box breathing. So that's very useful. So that's a way to do it. Get a guided, somebody who's talking to you in an app. Also, if you go on the internet, you can find guided meditations there. One of my favorite ways to do guided meditation is Yoga Nidra. And Yoga Nidra is lovely. You can find places where they're doing Yoga Nidra in studios. For example, your favorite local yoga studio has probably got some Yoga Nidra doing. I know Yona Willimantic does. If you go to Samadhi in Manchester, they probably do. And you check out West Hartford Yoga as well. So any of your favorite yoga studios, check to see if they have any Yoga Nidra workshops that you can do, or even regular classes. I'm finding, this is very interesting, I'm finding over at Angie Studio at Yono, the most popular classes are now the restorative yoga, which is the easiest, most relaxing yoga to do. That's the most popular one right now. Those are hour plus classes where you lie and you go into very easy poses and you breathe. Those are the most popular classes. That's the easiest yoga to do, but also People need the stress relief and they're having difficulty finding counselors. So restorative yoga helps to function that way because it helps to calm your cortisol. So, but for you at home who's like, well, I can't always make it to a yoga class. Well, gosh, neither can I. So that's why I choose to do anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes of stillness practice at home or wherever I am. If you don't require that, the only way I do yoga is to do it in an hour plus class, then you're going to be more likely to do it. And it's a lot easier to do 5 to 15 minutes of a stillness practice most days than it is to commit to doing an hour every day. And it's better for your health to do 5 to 15 minutes of a stillness practice every day than it is to do an hour practice once a week. So getting into that stillness practice will put you in a greater state of equanimity. I also have found that in the last year, my blood pressure has gone down. I was to the point where now I have a hereditary tendency towards high blood pressure. My mother and my sister are both on pills, and my doctor prescribed me a pill, which I didn't take. And I took supplements, and then I started to do this meditative practice most days. And the last few times I've been to my doctor, my blood pressure has been absolutely normal. If you are on a blood pressure medication, it's okay to do these restorative practices. Does that mean that it will help you to come off your meds? I don't know. That's something you have to work out with your doc. But it's possible because when you have less cortisol, your blood vessels are going to be less elastic because you don't have that cortisol going after the blood vessels trying to eat it. And then you're in this constant state of repair. Your blood vessels are not going to be as brittle and they're going to be more elastic. They're not going to be building up atherosclerosis. And your whole body relaxes when you have less cortisol around. All right. So what can you do? As I said, you can do seated meditation. You can do guided meditation. You can find yoga nidra. If you just Google yoga nidra, you're going to find yoga nidra on the internet. That's just free meditations for you to do. They can be anywhere from 5 minutes to an hour and a half and everything in between. And there is... I don't know if this has been studied or if it's just something that people say. There's the idea that half an hour of yoga nidra is equivalent to 2 to 4 hours of sleep. So if you're having trouble sleeping, on the one hand, if you do the yoga nidra, it's like you added a bunch of sleep to your night. On the other hand, if you do the yoga nidra, you might be more likely to get a good night's sleep because you're more relaxed. And so yoga nidra is something you can do. Restorative yoga is wonderful. So what is restorative yoga? It is yoga where you're being talked through it. You're being talked through the poses. The poses are relatively easy to do. They're stretchy poses that are not that hard to get into. There's generally a lot of props, things like blocks and straps and bolsters, especially bolsters. Bolsters and pillows are the biggest thing you use in yoga nidra. If you don't have a traditional yoga bolsters are lovely. I bought one. It's a really, in my opinion, it's a really good investment. I have one at home. I find I use it a lot. I use it frequently because I do restorative yoga at home. And I use it for Shavasana when I am at home. It's a really handy thing to have. It's a relaxing color. Mine happens to be teal. It has a little handle. So you can have them at home. You don't have to purchase a bolster. You can use the pillows from your bed. You can use cushions from your couch. You can use both. You can use blankets. You can use things in your house as yoga props. You don't have to purchase new stuff in order to have props for your yoga. So restorative yoga, again, you can find very short practices and very long practices and everything in between on the internet for no charge and do that. And again, 5 to 15 minutes, really, that's if you do that, you're going to feel so much better after you do that. And if you find you do that most days, you're going to be able to deal with your kids, your parents, your ill loved ones, your work, your stressful workload, whatever it is, you're going to be able to deal with all that stuff so much easier. 5 to 15 minutes is all it takes. And then there's yin yoga. Yin yoga is a little harder than restorative yoga. Yin is still restorative, but yin, the idea of yin is not 100% relaxation, although it is very, I find it very relaxing. Yin yoga, you're going to be getting into poses that may be harder to do than the restorative poses. Having said that, any yoga class that you go to at any time, any teacher is going to give you modifications. And remember, What's the most important thing about any yoga practice you do? What's the most important thing you do in yoga? I'll give you a hint. It's not the pose. It's the breath. All right. The breath is the thing that I want you to do. The breath is the thing that's going to take you to lower cortisol. So any pose that you get into, whether it's a restorative pose or a yin pose, you want to be breathing. That's more important than however you do the pose. And when you get into a pose, when you do yin yoga, you're supposed to find your edge. So the place in the pose where you can get the best stretch that you can get without putting yourself into pain, and then you resolve to be still in that pose. And if you're at a place where you cannot resolve to be still, you need to back off into the pose. So like if you're doing an advanced class, a class that's supposed to be advanced, and you can't get into the pose, then you're supposed to figure out a way to get into the pose that works for you, whether it's backing, not stretching so hard into the pose, or using props to do it. So Yin yoga is not like vinyasa yoga. Vinyasa yoga is where you go from pose to pose to pose to pose. Yin yoga is where you're holding poses for 90 seconds to as much as 5 minutes. You're not going to be holding a standing pose for that long, except for one pose, and that's ragdoll pose, where it's a forward fold. That's the only pose that you might be holding, and many practices don't even include that pose. Most of the poses are seated or lying. And that's it. And so they're poses that you can hold for a long period of time. And so yin yoga, if you can do it, also is very restorative, and you can do it for 5 to 15 minutes, any amount of time. And you get into a pose, you hold it, and you breathe, and you focus on the breathing. And if you can't breathe well because you're in the pose too intensely, get back to a place that's not your edge, that's beyond your edge. Find the edge where you can breathe regularly and deeply and get into that meditative state. So, and then the other thing that I like to tell people, now this is a standing practice generally, but it can be done seated as well, and that's Qigong. So Qigong is from a different tradition. It's from Chinese tradition, and it's a practice that includes movement that is that takes on the meridians of the body. It's to heal meridians in the body, and it's a very gentle practice. It is done standing, but it is also very meditative. And again, just like the practice of yoga, the number one most important thing in Qigong is breath, is breathing. And so when you do your breathing, you're going to regularize flow along the meridians, and you're going to relax, and you're going to lower cortisol. So the upshot of what I wanted to share with you is breathe, breathe, breathe. Breath is the most important thing. At Yono, they talk about the pause between the breaths. That's an important piece. That's a really beautiful statement, that you not only are you breathing and increasing cortisol, but there's a space between the breathing, and that's where the magic happens. And so pausing in your life is a super important thing, and that's what I'm trying to encourage you to do. If you feel like you have too much to do and you can't pause, what I'm trying to convey to you is that if you pause, you will be able to accomplish more. Also, if you pause, you may be less interested in accomplishing so much. And that's not a bad thing. One of the things I find in New England is that every minute is like, how can I use this minute to accomplish something? And that's not a good thing. You need restoration. And you need time to enjoy the beauty of your life, the beauty of the people around you, the beauty of the... I live here in Mansfield Hollow. It's gorgeous here. And so it's important to enjoy what's beautiful and wonderful in your life and take time to do that and stop and rest and not think that you have to accomplish stuff all the time. So my challenge to you is to figure out ways to pause, to stop. And the specific way I'm encouraging you to do it is do a practice of stillness. Can you get a practice of stillness, if not every day of the week, most days of the week, anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes? And all it has to involve is deep breathing. Your options are seated or lying meditation, where you simply lie down or sit and breathe deeply. Seated or lying guided meditation, where you have an app or a video or a recording that guides you through a meditation, which you can find on, you can Google, you can find on YouTube, you can find on many other sites. Restorative yoga, that's something you can try. Yin yoga, that's something you can try. And Qigong, those are all very basic ideas for things that you can try. No more than 5 to 15 minutes. You pick your amount of time. And I'm letting you know, if you start to add that as a practice in your life, your whole life is going to feel calmer and you'll have more equanimity and you will actually be able to accomplish more if you incorporate that rest into your life. Now, if you have time and you can and you want to do a longer practice, a longer meditation or yoga nidra or restorative yoga practice, if you can, if you want to spend an hour at it, that's really good for you because you spend all that time in low cortisol. It is very good for you. But people tell me that they don't have time. So what I'm not encouraging you to do that. If you want to try it, please be my guest. My challenge is 5 to 15 minutes most days of the week. Pick your restorative practice. It can be any of those. You can mix and match. You can do one, you can do five, whatever you want to do. But that's going to lower your cortisol. And send me a message. Tell me how you did. And tell me what happened for you and if you enjoyed it. So there you go. So I thought that was really important. It's at the top of my head right now. I'm finding that I'm encouraging my patients to do it more and more. So we want people to do that practice of stillness. Okay, so I'm going to move on and talk about some other things. I wanted to review the Thanksgiving foods and talk some about sweets and sugar and stuff. So let's see what we get to today. All right. Also, my birthday is November 28th, so you may be listening before or after that. I'm, you know, partway into Sagittarius and almost a week into Sagittarius. I was born in the Thanksgiving zone, and the Thanksgiving zone is November 22nd through November 28th. So, because those are Thanksgiving is the fourth Thursday in November. So the fourth Thursday in November can only be the 22nd through the 28th. So that's why every year falls on a different day. And every few years, my birthday falls on Thanksgiving. Not this year. This year, my birthday is on a Monday. It's fun when my birthday is on actual Thanksgiving. And in my family, my family didn't necessarily remember what the actual date of my birthday was. They remembered, oh, it's on Thanksgiving. So if we got together for Thanksgiving, we would celebrate my birthday, which is kind of fun. I think it's legal to celebrate my birthday anywhere from the beginning of November right on through to around December 15th, I think is good. So, you know, if you please go ahead and celebrate my birthday, you don't even have to tell me about it. Just have a drink, go out and see something pretty, do a meditation, do something nice for yourself. You don't even have to tell me about it. Just do something nice for yourself and make yourself happier. And you can do it if you feel like it, have it be in honor of my birthday. It's Fran's birthday. I'm going to go, I'm going to have a piece of chocolate. It's Fran's birthday. I'm going to go for a walk in Mansfield Hall. It's Fran's birthday. I'm going to have a drink. Go for it. You have my permission to do it. It just is an excuse to make yourself happier and be happier. I don't even have to know about it. All right. So the neat thing about my birthday, the interesting thing about my birthday is I was born in 1963. So I was born 6 days after the Kennedy assassination. So my mother was big with child on the Kennedy assassination. She was traveling. I think she had a prenatal visit on that day. And it was in New York City. She was living in Queens at the time. And she was taking the bus to the obstetrician. And when she was in the doctor's office, the announcement, she saw it when she was getting off the bus, she saw these students getting on the bus and they were in tears. They were just bereft. And she was like, what on earth happened? And she went into the doctor's office and it came over the intercom at the doctor's office that President Kennedy had been shot. And then he ultimately died. And so that was November 22nd. And a few days later, on November 26th, my mother was getting up and down because no remote to change the coverage of the news, what was going on with the assassination with Jack Ruby and all that stuff. And when she stood up, at one point she stood up, guess what? Water broke. So on November 26th, her water broke. So that was it. It was time to go to the hospital. And then I took another couple of days to get born because I was so excited to get born that I stuck my shoulder out of her. And shoulder, I don't know if you know about shoulders. If you're a shoulder presentation, that's pretty much an automatic C-section. So I don't know if they tried to turn me or what, because it took a while before they decided to do the C-section. Then they did the C-section, and I came out on Thanksgiving Day, and everybody was upset. So I thought I'd show up and try to cheer everybody up, and everybody had a little turkey, right? So there I am. So I'm your Thanksgiving turkey this year. If you want to eat turkey, you could have turkey. That's good. You can, we have chocolate turkeys. We also have turkeys, which is fine. So anyway, that's why I Thanksgiving is special to me, because it's conflated with my birthday. So hooray! So have fun and celebrate any way you want to. So now let's talk about some of those Thanksgiving foods. I want to go back to cinnamon because I sort of glossed over it last week. And cinnamon is not something to be toyed with lightly. It is not something to be glossed over. It's a very important food. There are many health-based health benefits and evidence-based of cinnamon. Cinnamon is very medicinal. It comes from the cinnamomum trees. It's been used through history. It was used in ancient Egypt. The two main types are the true cinnamon, which is the Ceylon cinnamon, and then there's cassia cinnamon, which is the most common variety today. And what you do is you cut the stems of the cinnamon tree, and you take out the inner bark, and the woody parts are removed, and the strips form into those little curls, those rolls, the sticks, and they can be ground into powder. And that distinct flavor and smell is the oily part, which is high in cinnamaldehyde. And they think that the cinnamaldehyde is responsible for most of the health effects and the metabolic effects. It has loads of antioxidants. Cinnamon also has polyphenols in it. And you hear me talk about how great polyphenols are all the time. So it has wonderful antioxidant properties. Cinnamon supplementation can increase antioxidant levels in your blood and also reduce levels of markers that increase inflammation, like your C-reactive protein. And you can also use cinnamon as a food preservative. So if you have cinnamon, if you make a dish that has cinnamon in it, it probably will take longer to go bad, which is probably why cinnamon is often used in tropical climates, particularly in Middle Eastern cooking. Because it will help to preserve the food. If you have the same dish, like a same stir fry, and one has turmeric and cinnamon in it and the other one doesn't, the one with turmeric and cinnamon in it will probably take longer to go bad in your fridge. Try it. It's interesting, right? And both terrific antioxidants, things that are antioxidants help to prevent things from going bad. They have antimicrobial properties as well. Cinnamon is going to be anti-inflammatory. They already said that it lowers C-reactive protein, so of course it's going to be anti-inflammatory. And so we don't want inflammation to be affecting the tissues of your body. And so the antioxidants tend to reduce inflammation in general. There's some idea that it could be used to protect against cardiovascular disease. There was a study where people ate a lot of cinnamon, and it lowered their LDL, raised their HDL, and lowered their total cholesterol. And another study showed that it could lower triglycerides. So that makes sense, because one of the things that's probably lower in the list, cinnamon helps to regulate blood sugar. And so higher blood sugar, higher triglycerides. Lower blood sugar, lower triglycerides. All right. Can improve your insulin sensitivities. Here it is. Some people who are insulin resistant, there's a suggestion that it does improve insulin sensitivity. And so therefore, it's going to help to regulate your blood sugar levels, helps to lower blood sugar levels. There's a few mechanisms by which it can lower blood sugar. One of them is because it increases your insulin sensitivity. It also slows down some of your digestive enzymes. So that means you're not going to be breaking down your starches into sugars as fast. So having cinnamon in your oatmeal is a very good idea, because it can make your oatmeal last longer. So please use your cinnamon in your oatmeal. It's a good idea to use your cinnamon in just about anything. I like to use cinnamon in pretty much anything that it tastes good in. Two of my favorite things to use cinnamon in are oatmeal, and the other is coffee. I love cinnamon in coffee. You'll find that if you put cinnamon in your coffee, you might not need as much sweetener of any kind in it. It tastes good like that. There is actually a compound in cinnamon that mimics the effects of insulin so that it increases uptake of sugar into your cells, so it lowers your blood sugar that way. And so cinnamon can also improve your hemoglobin A1C. So like I said, I keep cinnamon out along with the salt and pepper. I don't leave it in the drawer. I put it on the counter so it's easily, I can grab it easily and I can dump it into whatever. So I try to have some cinnamon, you know, as a spice almost every day. It might have effects in neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, which makes sense. Again, it has these great antioxidant compounds. One of the things they call Alzheimer's, I'm pointing to my head, it is because that's where my brain is and that's where you get the Alzheimer's. They talk about Alzheimer's as being type 3 diabetes, that there's blood sugar dysregulation in the brain, and that's how you get the neurodegeneration of Alzheimer's disease. So, of course, cinnamon can help with that because it's an antioxidant and it helps to regulate blood sugar. It's also going to help to regulate sugar in your brain. So that's a nice thing. And so there was a 2014 study where they studied mice with Parkinson's disease, poor mice, and it helped to protect their neurons and normalize their neurotransmitter levels. Cinnamon may be protective against cancer. Again, it's an antioxidant, so anything that's an antioxidant is going to help with healthy gene expression. And if genes express themselves normally and not in a deranged fashion, you're going to be less likely to have cancer. It was studied, cinnamaldehyde was studied against ovarian cancer, and it was found to block the expression of proteins in ovarian cancer growth. It's also, cinnamaldehyde may also be antifungal and other kinds of antimicrobial. There are fungi that are blocked by cinnamon, and also it can block listeria and salmonella. So that's why I'm saying if you put cinnamon in your food, you're less likely to get food poisoning and your food is going to take longer to go bad. Also, cinnamon can help with tooth decay and bad breath. So you can get cinnamon flavored mouthwash. The other thing you can do is gargle and or rinse your mouth with salt water with cinnamon in it. And the cinnamon will actually help your teeth. A nice little, so if you can get, if you could make a mouthwash where you took a small amount of water, you put in a pinch of sea salt, a pinch of cinnamon, and a pinch of neem powder, and you could rinse that in your mouth, and that will help your gums and will help to protect you against tooth decay. It's a really neat thing to try. Yeah, I would say, here, this is what I do. I probably do a little bit of water, pinch of sea salt, pinch of cinnamon, pinch of neem, drop a tea tree oil, and, you know, you can go do-do-do-do-do, and off you go, and rinse that in your mouth, and great. It'll be astringent, antimicrobial. It'll help with your breath because it's going to kill strep mutans. It's going to kill the bacteria that causes tooth decay. Cinnamon may be antiviral. And in this time of, you know, they keep yelling at us about the triple-demic now of COVID, RSV, and influenza. So if you got a lot of cinnamon going on, you might be a little bit less likely to get these viral infections. Cinnamon has been shown that the cassia varieties can be beneficial against HIV, which is the virus that causes AIDS. And other studies show it could prevent against influenza and dengue. So it's definitely specifically shown to be helpful against flu. So putting cinnamon in your oatmeal this time of year is a good idea. Maybe making a soup that includes cinnamon as part of its flavor profile. So the cassia variety has a lot of coumarin, which is a blood thinner. It can be harmful in large doses. So if you eat a lot of cassia, cinnamon, and you're already on blood thinners, that might be a bad thing. You could bleed more. And so you have to be careful of it. The Ceylon cinnamon doesn't have nearly as much coumarin as the cassia variety. So if you're dumping cinnamon, if you want to dump cinnamon, say it's not unusual for people to be on blood thinners and also have blood sugar regulation issues. So if that's you, make sure you're using Ceylon cinnamon so you don't have as much of those natural coumarins. And yes, coumarin and coumadin. Coumadin is the name of a drug that thins the blood. Coumarin is a natural compound that has antiplatelet aggregating activity. It thins the blood. So cinnamon is a lovely, versatile spice, has a lot of health benefits, really good for you. My recommendation is get a container and keep it filled up and keep it on the counter next to the salt and pepper so that you remember to put it in anything it's going to taste good in. You got some coffee going? Dump it in. You got some tea going? Dump it in. You got some oatmeal going? Dump it in. You got a nice soup going? Dump it in. Anything that you think it will taste good in. And, you know, cinnamon has a sweet profile, so it might not be as exciting on savory foods, but it can be. And there are recipes for fish and chicken and meat that include cinnamon, and there are places in the world where they use cinnamon in savory dishes. Morocco comes to mind. That part of the world, they use a lot of cinnamon. And again, that's a tropical region. And in tropical regions, they're going to be interested in putting spices in that inhibit bacterial growth so that their foods will last longer, you know, that they will deteriorate in a greater amount of time. Okay, let's talk about health benefits of ginger. Ginger. I am a fan of the ginger. And I admit I keep candied ginger in my desk. I eat a few chunks every day. Try to drink water afterwards because there is sugar in it. But it's a very easy way for me to get ginger in. And I enjoy it so much. Of course, ginger tea is a great way to do it too. So ginger originated in Southeast Asia. But of course, they grow it a lot in Jamaica. But Jamaica was settled by Indians from India. So there's a lot of Indian ancestry from India. There's local Indians, the Arawak, the Arawak were there in Jamaica too. But there's Indians from it. So it's interesting that Jamaica is the people of the West Indies can be combinations of African, Southeast Asian Indians and local First Nation peoples in that area. So they have culture from all of those places. And that's why that's why ginger and spicy food is so prominent in Jamaican cooking, because there's a heavy Southeast Asian influence in Jamaica. Ginger is in the Gingerbaraceae family, which is, it basically gets its own family. But it's also related to turmeric, cardamom, and galangal. Galangal tastes a lot like ginger. I think it's pepperier, more peppery than ginger. But turmeric, if you look at turmeric root and you look at ginger root, they look similar. It's just that ginger is more of a tan color when you cut it open. And turmeric, of course, when you cut it open, is that brilliant, beautiful golden yellow. And they all have the interesting flavor profiles. So you use the rhizome, which is a root-like, the underground part of the stem, and that's what you tend to use. You can use it fresh, dried, powdered, juiced, teas, however you want to get it. So let's talk about the gingerol. The gingerol is a constituent, and it helps with digestion, helps with nausea, it can fight flus and colds. So if you got ginger going in your body all the time, so if you got ginger and cinnamon going in your body all the time, you're going to smell better, you're going to taste better, and you're going to be less likely to get sick. So the gingerol, it gives it that classic flavor and taste profile. Gingerol is the main bioactive compound in ginger and also responsible for its medicinal properties. Terrific antioxidant, terrific anti-inflammatory, reduces oxidative stress. It's specifically used in many forms of nausea, the morning sickness of pregnancy. When my sister was pregnant with all of her children, she had a bag of candied ginger that no one else was to touch. And ginger was the main way that she helped to control her nausea. So it can help with the nausea of pregnancy. It can help with the nausea of chemotherapy. So any kind of nausea that you have, it can be helpful. And it's shown to be effective in morning sickness. There were lots of studies on morning sickness and ginger. Although there were some studies that show that it doesn't necessarily help with vomiting. It's generally considered safe, and it's generally considered safe in pregnancy, but if you use a huge amount of it, it could be an issue. The only thing is, if you're close to giving birth, so if you're in your eighth or ninth month, in your third trimester, it's spicy. And What do pregnant women who are like, enough already, do? They order Mexican, right? That's what you do. You get spicy food because the spicy food can help the uterus start the uterine's contractions going. So if you use a lot of ginger close to when you're supposed to give birth, it can it can induce labor, and it can induce labor early. So if you're having trouble with vaginal bleeding during your pregnancy, or you're close to giving birth and, you know, you're in your third trimester, you might want to hold off on doing huge amounts of ginger, you know, like the ginger to bring it on. On the other hand, if you're at your due date and you're not, and the contractions haven't started, then by all means, if you've been told, yep, your baby's done and you could give birth anytime, then I think it's fine to order the Mexican or take the ginger tea or eat the ginger. Then you're all right, because it's not a miscarriage at that point. So, all right. Ginger can help with fat loss. Remember we talked about lowering cortisol? Well, you can eat ginger too, and that might help with your fat loss too. So there was a great review that found that ginger supplementation reduced body. Maybe that's another reason why I'm at a lower weight rate, because I'm consuming a fair bit of ginger most days. Ginger can help reduce your body mass index. It also helps regulate insulin like cinnamon does. Of course, high insulin levels cause you to store more fat, especially right in your belly. Ginger is a lovely functional food. It's been studied to help with fat loss in general. There were a lot of animal studies that showed that. They did a study on rats, and they gave them ginger water and found that the rats had better weight when they drank the ginger water or ginger extract, even if they were given a high-fat diet. So there's a lot of mechanisms. And it's probably because it helps to reduce inflammation. If you consume a lot of ginger, you're going to have less inflammation, especially in your digestive system. So your digestive system is going to function more efficiently. And if that's going on, you're going to tend to have more fat loss. You're going to tend to sit at a better weight. Ginger can help with arthritis. It can help with joint pain, which is great. If you have joint pain and stiffness, it can help to reduce that. And you can take it internally, and you can also use preparations of ginger topically. I have an arthritis salve that my local herbalist made that ginger is one of the ingredients in it. And you'll find that some liniments and arthritis rubs contain ginger as an ingredient. So if you put it on topically, it can help with pain locally. People who take ginger, if they take ginger in pills, and I'm like, why would you take ginger in pills? It tastes so good. You should just eat it. But, you know, if you want to get a lot in, you can take it in pills. I have a couple of things. I have the candy ginger that I eat, and I also have tablets that are powdered ginger that are sweetened with xylitol and stevia. And so they have no sugar in them, and they're a great, easy way to get ginger in, and you get to taste it. If people are not crazy about the taste of ginger, some people, their palates, they're just not into it. If you didn't grow up eating it, or, you know, your mother never gave it to you or whatever, and you're not crazy about ginger, you might want to get capsules. And you can certainly find those. They're usually not very expensive. You can, you know, take them in hundreds of milligrams, and it's very safe. So, there was a combination of ginger, mastic gum, and cinnamon and sesame oil that helped reduce pain and stiffness of osteoarthritis of the knee. Again, blood sugar, heart disease factors, it helps with that as well. It can help to lower hemoglobin A1C. If you consume ginger regularly, it can reduce your A1C by 10% over a number of weeks. Hemoglobin A1C is a measure of the level of damage to cells as a result of high blood sugar. It can also help to lower apolipoprotein B and A1 ratio. So apolipoprotein B is a lipoprotein that when it's elevated, it can stick to your LDL and make your LDL stickier, so that it sticks to the inside of your blood vessels more. So if you can lower that ApoB, you can protect yourself against cardiovascular disease more readily. It also reduces malondialdehyde, which is a byproduct of oxidative stress. So I didn't realize there was direct cardiovascular inflammation reduction with ginger. Ginger's magic. It's one of those beautiful foods. This is going to be a shock to you. It can help treat chronic indigestion. We already said that it helps with nausea. So if your digestive system's not working so great, it's one of the things you can use. You have to decide. So if one of your things is you have reflux, some people find ginger too spicy, and they find that it's hard to tolerate for their stomachs, like if they have an irritated stomach. And yet ginger is definitely something we give for reflux and, you know, gastroesophageal reflux disorder and digestive inflammation. And, you know, I eat ginger, and I think that's one of the things I attribute to calming my stomach. Ginger can speed stomach emptying. So if you kind of have a sluggish digestion, you don't feel like your food moves through as readily. If you eat ginger in your food, things will move out more and you'll be more comfortable and you'll be able to, it'll speed your digestion and everything will work better and more efficiently, because as the ginger's going through, it's going to reduce inflammation as it's going through. They actually study this by giving people ginger and then giving them soup an hour later. And they found that the ginger significantly accelerated the emptying of the stomach. So if you have diabetes and you have been diagnosed with gastroparesis is where you have a neurological slowing of stomach emptying, ginger can be your friend. It might help you with your gastroparesis symptoms, help that stomach empty a little bit faster. It can help with your menstrual pain. What's that? I don't remember. I haven't had any menstrual anything for, let's see, it's been, it's been 7 or 8 years. It was 2015. What year is this? 7 years. Okay. Yeah, I don't remember. But if you're young enough to still have that, ginger can help your menstrual pain. You can eat, and you can eat it any which way. You can take it in pills. There was a study where they compared the use of ginger to an NSAID, and the three groups received either ginger powder, mefenamic acid, or ibuprofen, and the ginger was just as effective as the NSAIDs. So my advice is try the ginger, because the ginger's not going to have the side effects that the NSAIDs are going to have. And it works just as well as those things. And they used a combination of acetaminophen, caffeine, ibuprofen, and the ginger worked just as well as that as well. Ginger's pretty awesome. And then it's another one of those things that can help to lower your cholesterol levels. It can help to lower your LDL. It can help with your hyperlipidemia. So people don't always want to take it because they're not crazy about the taste that it leaves behind. I don't mind the taste that it leaves behind. I love ginger. I think it's great. There are studies where it shows that it reduces LDL. It also contains a substance that can help to protect against cancer. And they gave people 2 grams of ginger a day, and it reduced pro-inflammatory compounds in the colon. So that's great. So it's really a friend to the digestive system, I must say. And there's possible evidence that it may be effective against other kinds of GI cancer. Again, like the cinnamon, it can be helpful for brain function. And it's because it reduces inflammation. It's just such a wonderful anti-inflammatory. And there's some evidence that it can increase brain function directly. So I'm chewing on ginger while I'm doing your chart notes and studying. So I'm enhancing my brain function by consuming all this ginger. It's great. So you get better reaction time and better working memory. I'm hearing people talking about how they feel like they have a decline in cognitive function as they get older. And, you know, as I said, I'm, 7 years into my menopause. I feel like my cognitive function is still pretty good. Now, mind you, I get a lot of exercise, eat a lot of cinnamon, eat a lot of ginger, take a lot of antioxidants. That may be, there's probably a bunch of reasons why, but I do consume a fair bit of ginger pretty much every day. And I have regular cinnamon. And I get exercise, and I try to rest. I've prioritized rest a lot in the last year. So there's probably reasons why that's going on. I do take other antioxidants. Among them, I take vitamin E, and I take astaxanthin. I take vitamin C. I take beta carotene. So I got all those things on board that are probably helping as well. Ginger can help lower your risk of infections. It fights the oral bacteria linked to gingivitis. That's some Streptococcus mutans. And so it can help with your gingivitis and periodontitis. Gingivitis and periodontitis are linked to cardiovascular disease. Also, fresh ginger may be effective against RSV. So all these people that are worried about the RSV, if you can get your kids to take ginger or drink ginger tea or give them ginger syrup, it might protect against RSV. If the kid already has RSV, then give them ginger syrup. It's a really good thing to give them. So there are commercial ginger syrups that you can get at the health food store, and you can just give them ginger tea, any kind of ginger. So if your kid has RSV, get some ginger into them. It's probably a good idea. Very nutritious, really wonderful thing to have. I am almost done. I went through all these foods. I was going to talk about green beans and pumpkin. I think I'm going to end with pumpkin because it's so cute. Here, let's go to pumpkin and then we'll wrap up. There are impressive health benefits to pumpkins. It has a lot of vitamin A in it. It has a lot of antioxidant content, like beta carotenes, has all kinds of carotenes, alpha, beta, and bradycryptoxanthin. So that helps reduce your risk of cancer and chronic diseases. Pumpkin has a lot of vitamins that boost your immunity. Your beta carotene will be converted to vitamin A, which strengthens your immune system. It's also high in vitamin C and E. There's vitamin A, there's lutein and zeaxanthin in pumpkin. So lutein and zeaxanthin is very good for your eye health. Just went to the eye doctor on Wednesday and he said, you have no sign of cataracts and you have no macular degeneration. The only thing he saw in my eye was a floater. I knew I had the floater. I said, can I do something about the floater? He said, no. So, I mean, I might do some homeopathic stuff around the floater, but we'll see. And we'll see. I think I have some floater eye drops that I got, but they're just homeopathic. I don't know if they'll do anything. But I am 50. I'm going to be 59 next week. I have no macular degeneration, no sign of cataracts at all. And I take lutein and zeaxanthin. That's one of the things that I take. Plus I take all these other antioxidants and I eat them too. And it's, lot of nutrient density and low calorie. And so it has a lot of fiber, has a lot of nutrition in it. It has slow fiber and it will, you know, slows down your digestion so that it helps your appetite. It's Whole30 and paleo friendly. Because of the antioxidants, can lower your risk of cancer, of course. And because it has potassium, vitamin C, and the fiber, it can help your heart health. And it has compounds that help with healthy skin. And it's also very easy to add to your diet. It's very good. You can make soup with pumpkin in it. You can make sweet things with pumpkin in it. You can put pumpkin into your baked goods, your cookies and your brownies and things like that. It gives it more fiber and more pep. And then you can put a little pumpkin spice in. Ah, I said it. All right. So there's some foods that you can eat. I didn't get around to talking about the sugar stuff, so I guess I'll talk about that the next time I'm on. So at this point, it's time for me to wrap up. So I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving, and I hope that your holiday season is going well. If you're listening on WHUS, it's after my birthday, so thanks for the good wishes. So I'm going to sign off. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more on Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.